I'm Joshua Simon.
I'm Sam Joe.
And we are
the SG Boys,
that little gay podcast from Singapore.
Subscribe and find us on Instagram at the SG Boys.
Give it up for Sean So. It's Plan Bro in the house.
Hi, everyone.
Okay, explain why you were late, please.
Why I was late? Okay, so yesterday we went out to an event by Former Homo, and I was very drunk and I was stumbling outside, and then I was like, Sam Joe, please help me. And then Sam Joe helped me into a cab.
Because he knew that you had to record an episode the next day.
Yes.
Yeah.
I did get home by 2, so it's pretty appropriate. I think it's fine. I got 8 hours of sleep. So.
That's good. Yeah. It was quite a sensible, you know, time to go home, because we were looking at the clock and it was like 12 hours. Can or not? Can I? Okay. Yeah. So I was also calculating in my head. I was like, when should I go home? You know, because usually I'm the late one. So I'm just thankful that I wasn't the last one. Thank you, Sean. Thanks for making me somewhat early.
But I heard rumor has it that, Sam Joe, you were quite the party mom. You were taking care of everyone yesterday.
Yeah, because like I'm, you know, of a certain age and I need to. No, I'm kidding. It's one of those things, right? When you're the sober one, you take care of people around you. Like, you know, I've had to depend on so many friends as well. It's like putting me in cabs or like making sure I drink water and everything. And the last thing you want is like to be left alone out. Mm. You know, when Singapore is like relatively safe, but you never know, like, nightlife is fun, but it's dangerous, girl. It's like, you know, you gotta look out for each other.
I think people reach out to you also because you're dependable. We know that if we ask you to help us, like, we'll be safe.
So yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's yeah.
That's the other thing about Sam Joe. Like, Sam Joe, like, colorful on the surface, loud, fun, and everything, but I wouldn't want to double cross Sam Joe. I feel like if Sam Joe, if push so comes true. To shove, Sam Joe would be like, hold my earring. Like,
wait, what?
I actually feel like you would protect your people if push comes to shove. I really do feel that you've got that energy about you.
Right.
Well,
right.
I've seen it. Other than the very like happy and lighthearted exterior that we all get to enjoy and celebrate, there's also this other part of you who is like very. A protector.
Oh, thank you. Thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel very protected in return by a lot of my friends. And I don't know, I think we just have to look out for each other, you know, because all we have is each other. And all you need is love.
All
you need is love.
A lady's got to eat.
Oh, I love that we're talking about community and taking care of one another, because Sean here has had quite the journey. You were born in Singapore, right?
Yes, I'm born in Singapore.
Born in Singapore, and then you moved overseas.
Yes, I moved to London. I lived there for 10 years.
What were you looking for in London?
Escape.
Let's start there.
I was in the closet, so I wasn't accepting myself and my sexuality. I was also trying to pursue creative arts, work in design, and my parents were not very supportive because during that time, design wasn't seen as an actual career. And so there was a lot of frustration inside, and I always felt like the odd one out, like I didn't belong. So everything in my life in Singapore always made me feel like I was wrong, and there was a lot of shame in it. So I remember when I first went to London and went to visit my friend there, and I met his friends, and I think the bubble just popped. I was like, wow, there's this other world out there where no one actually gives a shit about anything. Like, everything's so free and open. And I came back to Singapore and I thought to myself, okay, I'm going to move there eventually, maybe to study. About 3 years later, after working 3 jobs and saving enough money, I managed to get into Central Saint Martins and I studied there. And next thing you knew it, I was there for 10 years.
Then you came back.
Then I came back, yes.
Why?
Because
it seemed like you had found what you were looking for.
Yes.
Did you find the escape that you needed from...
Yes and no. The first thing that I had to experience was trying to accept myself. I found it very difficult to accept myself and my sexuality. I remember I was so afraid to be gay. I wanted to challenge myself to be okay with being gay, that I would walk around the streets of Soho just to train myself not to be afraid to be around gay people or like queer people. I had a flatmate, and my flatmate, he's straight. He's a very tall, handsome Italian man. His name is Francesco. And when he found out that when I was in Singapore, I was in the closet, I was going through conversion therapy, and then he was like, what? You're in your 20s and you've never been to a gay club? I'm like, no. I was like, why? He's like, I'm scared. And he was like, okay, Sean, we're going to a gay club every weekend until you're not scared anymore. And we went out every weekend for 3 months in a row. I remember the first time when I went, I was so scared. I was trembling. And he would just hold my hands like, we can do this, Sean. We can do this. And I felt for the first time, like it was such a contrasted experience I felt in Singapore. Because like when I was in Singapore, I came out to my friends, my best friend, and she told me that she couldn't be friends with me anymore. Whereas in London, this flatmate of mine, who I don't know for very long, completely accepted me. I also remember I came out to another friend, his name is Stefan, and I was like, Stefan, I am a gay. And he was like, okay, what do you want to tell me? And I was so mind blown, absolutely mind blown. Eventually, throughout the years, I began to have my own exploration of my sexuality and what it means to be gay. In the beginning, I thought it was about going to gay clubs a lot, or like dating a lot, drink, party, casual sex, and date a lot, and talk about boys. But then I had a realization that the thing that was really bugging me was that I didn't have the acceptance of my family and of myself.
Mm.
And so I think things really, really, really changed. I think at the near end of my time in London, I left London because life was very tough there. You know, I started multiple businesses there. I had a theater production company. I started an events design company, which I'm still running today. I also started a restaurant. Out of those three businesses, two failed. I lost all my money. And then I think the last bit was the restaurant. And when I had to give the restaurant away, I was completely heartbroken. And I was like, I can't do this anymore. I need to reconnect with myself. I came to Singapore just to see my family for Chinese New Year. And then COVID came, so I got stuck here.
But so this is a fairly recent...
I came back 4 years ago.
Ah.
Yeah. But the thing is, I think being back here in Singapore, it has helped me appreciate what I have here, but it also has allowed me to reconnect with my family and especially my parents.
Yeah.
My parents was the two people that I felt couldn't completely accept me, or maybe they did, but couldn't vocalize it or couldn't express it. But ever since I moved back, the last 4 years, it's been transformative. We now talk about my dating life, my sex life. We talk about everything. My dad, there was one other funny story. Because I was really sad. It was my birthday. I was crying. I was like, oh my God, dad. Like, because my sister has just given birth. I was very happy, but I was also very jealous because I always want to be a father. So I remember on the phone with my dad, and I was crying. I was like, oh my God, I'm gay. Like, I can't have a family here. There's no way. Like, how can I ever be a father? Blah, blah, blah. And then my dad, being my dad, was very quiet. And then he just, after being quiet for a while, he started scolding me. He was like, why are you so sad? Stop being sad. And just like, I think he just didn't know how to react. He just didn't want to see me sad.
Mm.
But then about 2 weeks later, after the phone call, we met up for breakfast. And he sat me down. I was like, oh my God, Sean, I got this contact. Son, I have this contact. I was like, what? I was like, okay, so apparently if you go to China, you call this agent and this agent will help you find a girl and then you pregnant her. And then you
wait, hold up.
And then you come back with a kid.
Wow.
Do you want or not? It's 50K. We split half and half. And I just sat there like, in complete shock. Like, first of all, the story is ridiculous. And I was like, how do you get this contact? He's like, oh, some guy that he met in a coffee shop in Kopitiam. So first of all, he went to ask around for this contact.
By the way, we cannot confirm nor deny the existence of such a practice.
Such a service provider. Yeah.
But I think wow. For me, it was just like, the act of it was just so sweet that I was completely moved. I was very, very moved.
He was your dad, not wanting to see you sad. And wanting to help you fulfill your dream of becoming a father. That's so sweet.
And wanting you to believe that it is not impossible that, you know, like, my son's gay and that's it. They've resented themselves to believe that they'll never be grandparents or whatever. So the fact that he's also like sharing that dream with you and saying like, no, it is not impossible, that there is a solution. I'm actually going to actively look for a solution.
My dad has really changed a lot over the years. And I remember once talking to him about being gay and stuff like that. And after a very long conversation, he came to this point where he said that he thinks I am gay because of him and that his failure to be a good father when I was young. When I heard that, that really, really hurt me. I told him that it's not his fault. But I don't think he actually believes it. Sometimes observing his actions, he's trying to make right by being more supportive and like breaking down his cultural expectations that he has built up over his years and his upbringing. He's trying to break that down and trying to come to my level and understand me. Because like, I remember when 377A was repealed, he was the one that told me, like, I actually didn't know on that day. And he was driving me back to my place and he was like, son, do you know 377A is repealed? I was like, huh? No way, no way. He's like, yeah, don't lose hope, son. There's hope. You will have your family soon. Like,
oh,
yeah. And then he was like, I know we are the older generation, but we have to change. If not, the world will not become a better place. I was so dumbstruck because this is the same father that I argued with so much through my entire youth. Like, we had such a terrible relationship. We hated each other.
I'm just curious, if you don't mind rewinding a little bit.
Yeah.
So how do you go from you know, hating each other to him basically being one of your best friends now?
Was there an event that occurred? Was there sort of like a pivotal?
I think it's patience. First of all, it's like, I think in the beginning we fought a lot because I was young. He was in his 30s. I was very young. I think we're 20 years apart. So I was in my teens and he's in his 30s. And he was trying to like figure out being a father. He didn't understand how to do it. So then now that I'm in my 30s and I was living in London then, I was starting my own business like how he was at my age. I remember calling my dad a lot, always crying, breaking down because I was like, how the hell do you run a business, pay rent and like trying to get your act together? And then on top of that, you had me. Like, how did you do it? I think like experiencing what he experienced helped me put myself in his shoes. Whereas for him, I think is because during a time when I was still living in London, he had a triple bypass heart surgery. And when he was, and he didn't tell me actually. He didn't tell me because he didn't want me to worry. So I didn't actually know about it. And then until like he finished the operation, and when I found out about it, I was like, oh my gosh, like, what? So I flew back and we were having breakfast and he said, you know, when I was on the hospital bed, I was lying down and I realized that nothing actually really matters. I also then at that point over soft-boiled eggs and two kopis, I said to him, Dad, it's been so long that we've been fighting and I almost lost you. We need to get over this gay thing, like, can we just be friends? And then he just said, okay. And then I think that was like the turning point of everything.
Right. Wow.
He saw you as a person and not just his son.
I think when you're on the brink of death, as I'm sure he was, he felt like he was, you know, your life flashes before your eyes and you go like, okay, what's important? What do you want to hang on to? And what do you want to cherish and make right going forward? Like with what little time we have left.
I think sometimes we forget that our parents are people too.
Yeah.
They're like us. They're exactly like us. Like, I'm in my 30s, late 30s, almost 40. I still have no idea sometimes, like, what the heck am I doing in my life? But when we're young, we're in our teens, we have the expectation of our parents to understand and know how to do everything. And so the resentment comes from that. But I think when it switches, you're like, oh my gosh, now I'm at their age. How the heck do they do it? How the heck do they have children? Like, and I also think sometimes we see our parents as like these statues. They never change. But actually, you know, I'm not the same person I was in my 20s. So my father in his 60s is not the same person he was in his 50s, in his 40s. He has changed and evolved as well. And I'm just very glad that I got to grow together with him.
Yeah. And also, like, another layer to that that I've noticed as well with, like, with my dad is that, yes, like, he is his own person, and, like, remembering that is important as well. But I think I've also, as I age, realized how similar we are. You want to talk about sort of like the inherited sort of even insecurities, behavior, body language, all that. Like, I would do or say certain things and or even tell a joke a certain way and be like, oh my gosh, I kind of sound like my dad.
Oh my gosh, that's so true. That's
or I'm behaving like my dad. Or like in the last episode, I was talking about sort of my trip with my dad and my mom in Japan and hearing some of his stories and what he went through when 9/11 happened, for example, and he remembered where he was. So he was sharing with me how he reacted and everything. I was like, oh my gosh, that's how I would react. These are the things I would say. These are the calls I would make. And the first instinct would be this, this, this. And it's like, he did the exact same thing. It's like, it's kind of, I've not put us in the same kind of equation like that. Cause I mean, as a teenager, you want to be as far away and as an individual as you can be away from your parents. You know, you can kind of trying to carve your own path. But then as I age, I realized that actually I'm very similar to my mom and dad. To fight it, it would be really disappointing, I feel, because, it helps me to understand myself, but also my parents a lot more. Yeah.
So true. Do you think that your, even your flaws are similar?
Yeah, I think so too. I want to also now rewind back to a couple of things that you said. So just maybe clarifications. You said that the first friend that you came out to pretty much like disowned you as a friend. Was that while you were in Singapore or in London?
When I was in Singapore, I was going through conversion therapy. I did it for 4 years.
That was the other thing I wanted to like, wait.
Yeah. Details. I mean, whatever you're comfortable sharing, but yes.
Of course. If it's okay.
Yeah, of course. So maybe I'll talk about conversion therapy and then I'll get to the friend bit. I was deeply religious then. When I came out to my parents, they didn't accept me. My mom walked into my room with my ex. We were both studying. Oh, she was knocking on the door. It was like 2 a.m., so usually asleep. We're both like just doing our own thing, rushing our projects. So we're just hanging out together in the same room. And then I was like, oh my God, my mom's coming in. I don't know why I didn't just open the door. I don't know why. Gay panic, right? So I got my ex to hide behind the door. So when my mom opened the door, she pushed and I was like, who is this behind the door? And he was like, hi, auntie. And she's like, who are you? And then she put two and two together. And she's like, get the fuck out. And then it was horrible. She just asked, are you a gay? Are you a gay? I said, yes. No. I remember it was like pouring outside. It was like huge, like heavy thunder, like rain showers. And when I heard her say no, I was heartbroken. So I ran to my bedroom. I grabbed a sketchbook and pencil and my Discman with Avril Lavigne.
Oh yes.
Ran out, put them on a plastic bag. I ran out like sobbing in the rain. My ex has disappeared at this point. And then I called my friend and then she housed me and she took me in. So I didn't go home for like 2-3 days. Anyway, so once I got back home, we never talked about it. We just pretend it never happened. More. And I think that to me, at that age, I was like, oh, we should just treat it as nothing has ever happened. So I kept everything inside. So when I found religion, I heard about conversion therapy and it was 4 years. It was quite traumatizing. It's part counseling and part exorcism. And the counseling part was also like a lot of shame was being put into me. Okay, so I was a difficult case apparently because I kept saying I'm gay. So they had a problem with me saying that I'm gay. But my argument is like I can lie to everyone, but I can't lie to myself. I need to first accept I'm gay, but I don't want to be gay. And then I can start from there. But throughout the 4 years, the conversation was always around labeling myself. I should not apply a label on myself. I went to the last session. It was me with this ex-gay watching a videotape about purity. And then he came in and he was like, hi, you know, like, so I hear that you say you're gay. I was like, yes. And he's like, no, 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 we can't say that. We can't say that. I was like, okay. I was like, actually, we thought I've spoken to your leaders and stuff, and we decided that there'll be this program for you that'd be really good for you. So I was like, what is it? It's like, so every Wednesday we meet up and it's a support group for men with the same tendencies as you to meet up and support each other with gay men that don't want to be gay. Okay, great. Before I let you join the group, like, you have to sign this consent form. And I was like, okay, what is this consent form about? And then he explained, commit that you will not fall in love or fornicate with any other members in the group. And I just looked at him and he was like, yes, because there's two men that kind of like met in the group and then they fell in love and they ran away to Canada and got married. And I was like, oh my God, that's so cute. And he was like,
yeah, sounds quite romantic to me.
Yeah, love in a hopeless place. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's so cute. And he was like, no, that's not cute at all. And I just sat there looking at him and I thought to myself, oh my gosh, am I a piece of paper now? Like, am I so dehumanized that now I'm a contract? And I just sat there looking at the notebook, scribbled with so many notes over all the sessions that I've had. And I just looked at him, I was like, I'm so sorry, but I think I'm done. I think, like, after 4 years, I'm going to try the next thing. So part one is I'm going to try 4 years not being gay. And part two is I'm going to try next 4 years to be gay. And as gay as I can be. And then at the end of that, I will decide which one I like better. So I left and then I threw away the notebook. And then I went to my car and I sobbed. And then I think it was just like after that, like about 6 months to a year, I moved to London. And so back to what your question was with my friend, was then I had this like 6 months in London. I was like so mind blown by all the experiences and how accepted I was. And I came back to Singapore to see my family. And I met up with my best friend. I was sharing her about how excited I was, how I feel so aligned to myself, that I feel so accepted, I feel amazing, there's this new thing that I'm experiencing. And she was very quiet, but then when she drove me back home in the car, she just said very quietly to me, like, Sean, I am so happy for you that you have found this, but I can't be friends with someone that has given up on themselves, and so I can't be friends with you anymore.
How frustrating is it and confusing is it, right? Because we're listening to your story of your experiences, that 4 years of trying not to be gay is 4 years of you being at war with yourself, your body, who you are on the inside, your feelings of attraction, even something as innocent and pure as love and attraction, curiosity, having a crush, immediately you feel that sense of shame. You look away. You look down. So you're now conditioned to believe that the best qualities of you, you should reject. And then you decide to not live like that. And you decide to try to live in harmony. And then the people that you call your closest tell you that, hey, you've given up on yourself. Like, how confusing is that for someone trying to navigate this world?
At that time, I was like, yeah, of course you would not be friends with me because there's something wrong with me. So I accepted that because my belief was that it is wrong, it is shameful. Part of the result of accepting yourself was wrong, and that's why the result of that is losing someone that you care about. I remember begging her. I was like, why we should be friends? Like, why are you doing this? Why? But she was very quiet. She was sobbing as well. And then she's like, I'm sorry. And that was it. And then we never ever spoke again.
So she's not in your life anymore?
No.
Her loss.
And also, we don't know where she is right now. You know, people do change over time and we offer that grace to them as well. Your recollection of her impact on your life, you also don't know your impact in her life. and how maybe that must have really hurt for her as well. And how, you know, I'm hoping that she remembers that and that she reassessed it. And then she meets another person and she tries to do better. Mm. Yeah, that's what at least I hope for.
But I think also we change. If that happened now, I'll be like, okay.
Yeah, take me or leave me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, so that I think I wouldn't be begging. I'll be hurt, but I'll be like, okay, I understand where you're coming from, but this is who I am now.
Mm.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It seems like you're at a place of peace right now, which is great. But I can't imagine going through all of that and like having to have people like gaslight you so much along the way and make you doubt yourself so much. I mean, you're not the only one, right? There's so many others, like the two guys that were in Canada and everyone else who did not, like, you know what I mean? Like, good for them, like, you know, living their best life, and good for you now. But what are people who didn't come out of that on the other side? I'm just filled with so much like indignation and, you know, even though it's not my experience, but I'm so happy that you are here sharing this version of the story, because it could have gone either way.
Yeah.
You know, you could have continued, you could have signed that consent form, which is a shit thing to do to anyone, and you could have gone in and, like, you know, met up with these other people, and who knows, you know, maybe now you would have been married to a woman, but you would have been living a lie. Yeah,
like, and you hurting said, other people as well. And that's the thing we forget. We think, oh, like, you do that for yourself, you're saving yourself. You don't realize when you don't live in harmony with yourself, you cause a lot of hurt to other people around you, wreck other people's lives.
Yeah. I mean, I pictured a box in your chest weighing down on you when you said, you know, you wanted to get, if you could get rid of this thing that was making your life a lot tougher. That, I think a lot of us can relate to that, right? There was that deep, dark secret, or maybe not so much a secret, but something that you wish you could, you know, excise from yourself. It was almost like, oh, a tumor that you wanted to get rid of.
You know,
but thankfully, we have grown into accepting that as, like, you know, it's not something that should weigh us down. In fact, if anything, it's something that should lift us up.
Yes.
And I'm glad that, you know, in a way, that box is open and, like, you are, you know, you have spread your wings in that sense.
Yeah.
It's a very bad analogy, but you get what I mean.
I want to answer that. I mean, that's why he's plant bro, right? Because he's bloomed.
Oh, it was a seed that was sowed and then still a pun on his surname.
Exactly. And now he's blossomed.
He germinated.
Yes.
And then he slowly start sprouting roots first in London, and then suddenly, yes, like, ooh, the leaves came out, and then he's what? He's blossomed. So from plant bro, he's now flower bro.
Yes.
Yeah.
Soon to be fruit bro.
Bearing fruit. Wait. Do you have news?
Is yes, I'm it? Pregnant.
Oh my god, yes. I'm so excited for you. How many months?
Just two.
Oh, okay.
Why did I for no a second that- believe you? Like, for a second I was like, wait, hold up. I think we got to know each other, well, maybe a couple of years ago. From moving back to Singapore from London, he has gone from like, okay, I'm trying to navigate this space, I don't know if I belong here. The more I'm catching up with him, he's more at home and he's starting to feel more and more comfortable with him being here. But also sort of, you feel like you have a calling to be here, yes, or you feel like you're meant to be here.
Yes. In the beginning, when I was back, I was like, oh my god, I need to get the fuck out of here. Mm-hmm. I need to leave. I think it was only last year that I began to find my place. It's like understanding the privilege that I have to be able to experience my experience, but also be able to come out of it. But on top of that, been given a platform where people can hear my story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Make them feel less alone. I think you don't ever underestimate like how many people you're reaching out to. I know from time to time, even on your socials, you do like a weekly check-in with people, yes, like, how are you doing? And these could be your friends. It could be strangers as well, right? Who follow you. Yes. And I love that you take the time to actually read all their messages and just do like a mental health check-in.
Yeah, it's like his comment section is almost like a little community of like-minded individuals that think and feel and maybe even dress the same.
Yeah, because she's a fashionista. Yeah. By the way, oh my god, I'm so severely underdressed. Thank goodness there's no video component to this. But because I just rolled out a bit, you know, that's why I was on time. But Sean sounds good, looks good, and always like so stylish. But that's part of your brand also.
I've started putting more effort in my dressing because of him.
Really?
No. Yes, I shit you not, because
it was a read. That was a read.
No, I shit you not. I was very passionate. No, I'm very passionate about this because, yeah, like, I Like, I've always liked dressing up, but I do it more of like, if I'm feeling a certain way, then I either dress like how I'm feeling or I dress more than what I'm feeling. So if I'm feeling very dull today, then I'll dress super colorful to lift myself up. But then because I follow this plant bro and the algorithm has decided that like everything he posts has to be the first thing that I see on my feed.
Wow. So you wake up to plant bro every
morning. Like every single day I have to see him dress up in front of me. Oh, he's getting ready for class. Shit, I just like throw stuff on. Maybe I should be a bit more conscious about what I wear. So I've actually started enjoying like putting things together because he shows you like how he puts things together and like proportions and stuff. So like I've learned quite a bit from even that. So like that has boosted my confidence, right? I want to get to something.
I was gonna say you look good. As Gia Gunn would say.
Bitch, I had like 3 outfit changes before I landed on this one.
No, you look really good. You know that. We were on the way to get Kopi now. And I was like, Josh, you are so well-dressed. And I
wanted to match his vibe. Green, which you have also done well. Your hair is green.
It's turquoise, but sure. Sure. I mean, in this like, you know, yellow lighting, it's fine. It's fine. It's okay. Yeah.
About your socials.
Yes.
You seem easily like one of the most outgoing people on my social media, at least on my feed. You're organizing parties. You're going to parties. You're going for your Muay Thai.
Yes.
You're constantly talking to your audience.
Yes.
So open about your life. But then you also insist that you're an introvert, which like rocks my world because I thought I was an extrovert, but like I'm at home and I'm keeping away from the rest of the world. If you could sort of talk about maybe the misconception about introverts or what is it really like to be you? Because that is the social media side, but also like when I do hang out with you, I see that introvert side. You are very soft-spoken. You do kind of keep to yourself and you really don't open up until you feel like you trust people.
Yes. Being an introvert is basically where you find your energy. And I recharge my energy by being alone. There's two opposites trying to coexist in me because there's another side of me, which is I love people. I love community. I love making connections, like deep connections. And also with my work as an influencer, it's quite a social job. So like you have to go out, you have to meet people. It's the coexistence of both that maybe confuses people a little bit. There's also another reason is that I don't have a choice because if I just stay at home all the time, I wouldn't meet anyone because ever since I moved back to Singapore, I feel I hit the reset button because all the friends I had previously before I moved to London, I've outgrown them so much. Like we have different values. We have drifted apart. And now I came back to Singapore. I literally have no friends. I didn't know anyone. And also during that time, once I moved back, and all the emotions crept in, I developed really bad social anxiety that made me feel even more isolated.
Yeah.
Like, I need to take a risk. I need to challenge myself. I need to put myself out there. So I love dancing. And then I went to my first baby boy. The best LGBTQ club night in Singapore.
Hello. I've heard a lot about this.
Shout out.
Yes.
Yeah. See, I keep asking him to go and he's just it's been, so you know.
Good. Since the very first baby boy, he's been telling me I should
go. You would love it.
So I went there. I went alone, actually. It was very overwhelming, but because I love dancing, I just lose myself. After that, I've been to every single one, and I also met Samjo there. That was before we became friends. I first met Samjo, and he was on crutches in a club night.
That was the Christmas edition. Yes.
And I remember walking up the steps of Hard Rock Cafe and seeing this guy in crutches at a club, and I was like, "Are you okay?" And he's like, "Yeah, I'm fine."
He will do whatever it takes.
No, I just really wanted to be there because it was a Christmas edition.
Yeah.
So I was wearing a Christmas elf outfit. Yes, not sure if you remember. And I had like fairy lights on me because I'm extra that way.
Yes.
And I was so angry because I had just sprained my ankle a few days before. I was hosting an event in drag, and then I tripped on my heels and I twisted it real bad. So, but I still wanted to party, like you know me.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm the epitome of an extrovert, right? So for me, it was like, oh, I would feel so formal, you know? So I wanted to be there. And I'm glad that we met.
Yeah, so through these club nights and these events, I began to meet people.
One of my earliest memories of you was, again, baby boy, and you were like dancing in the corner alone. And I was just very intrigued by this guy, right? Like, you know, I had seen him on social media on and off. I had seen you getting spanked on stage.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
By my mom.
By your mom. No, wait, it was almost your mom. Then you swapped, right?
Who is it? This is Brandon that spanked me instead.
Yeah, I think so. So it was at Riot Drag Show, Becca DeBus. So Becca always does this. Okay. Hi, Becca. She always does this like birthday segment where you spank the birthday people.
Yeah. Right.
So a friend, or in Sean's case, a relative comes up with you. And then if you are the birthday boy or girl, you get spanked lah.
Yeah. Okay. I brought my family to Riot, and it was my family's first time seeing a drag show.
Yeah.
And then they did a birthday thing.
So that was my first impression of you.
Oh.
And actually, and then one of my earlier memories, and then I saw you dancing at Baby Boy. So I always, from afar, I always thought, clearly an extrovert. But then when I started talking to you, I was like, oh my God, he's so soft-spoken, and but very genuine, and I, you know, get good vibes from there. And I always believed that, extrovert, introvert or not, we are all on the spectrum, and sometimes we have our moods, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't see me like being all so loud and proud and everything and all over the place, but sometimes I have my moments, and I really, really appreciate like one-on-one conversations that we have also, because I think that that's really how you like get to understand some people better, you know.
If you allow me to be like kind of vulnerable, is I feel like being back in Singapore, it's like I'm like the kid that joined secondary school at sec 4. So everyone already has friends. And no matter how hard I try to build connections with people, I would never be someone's number one or number two friend. I feel like I'm always, at best, a number five. Because that thought comes to my head sometimes. And sometimes it passes, but when it doesn't, I feel really, really, really sad. Because it's not something I can force. And it's not like I don't have friends that I am their number one friend, but they're just not here. They're back in London. I still feel that I am not important enough.
I'm just going to hold your hand and let you know that that's so not true. That you are important. I understand. You know that. You're very cherished, like really, really.
I know. I know what you say.
But we definitely are all susceptible to such moments of insecurity. Like me too. Who doesn't want to be everyone's first choice, or like, you know, or who doesn't want that like company, that intimacy, that, you know, like you said, community. Yeah, I just want you to know that appearances, like, the grass is always greener on the other side. The plant is always greener on the other side. If you think about it. I don't know. What do you think, Josh?
The thing that I've been practicing and I'm hearing you share that reminds me of this thing that I've been practicing, which is to, whenever you feel raw like that, try to locate the lie, right? And the lie in this is that you are not enough, or that no one actually cares about you, right? You go to the root lie, because that lie has been there since you were a kid and you were told, like, you need to pray the gay away, you need to change, otherwise I will leave you. That there is something fundamentally wrong with you. And you have to either behave a certain way or love a certain way, then only will I accept you. Like, that was a lie that has been like there for decades now, you know? So it's like when you have these little moments where you feel a bit more tender, then that lie comes up again. It's like, hey, is it true? And I need to hear that assurance once again that, hey, you love me, right? You do care about me, right? You will show up for me, right? Over and over and over again. But like, just detect the lie there, because it's not true. It's not true. I'm telling you, it's not true.
Again, whatever your personality type, extrovert, introvert, like, we all need to be self-sufficient. And that's something that I have to train myself to do also. I'm so reliant on the company of other people. In fact, I feel quite lost. Like, yeah, sometimes I need my me time, but after a while, I get very restless and, like, very itchy. Like, I need to go hang out. I need to go sing karaoke. Which is why we ended up on a random Tuesday night.
And Medusa.
Our favorite KTV pub. But actually, sometimes, like, what we have within us is enough. We just need to remember that. I constantly forget that I don't need other people's validation to be happy, to feel wanted. In fact, it's great to have all these from other people, mm. right? You know, to have love, to receive love from other people. But if we keep hankering for it, that's just ridiculous, because let's face it, we all have our own lives. We all are on our different journeys. We're all busy with different shit, like, you know, work, friends, tragedies in our lives. Who knows? Like, everyone's always going through something. Like, sometimes I'll get very resentful also. I'm like, oh, you promised to hang with me. At the last minute, you pangse, right? And I realized that, okay, actually, after a while, I stopped being angry at these people because they have life to do.
Yeah.
Someone's always going through something else, and it's not on us, it's on them. Mm. And it's okay. I think we can all relate to this. Like, some of our closest friends, best friends, like for you, Sean, those in London, you don't see them as much as a lot of other people. But when you do, it's like time never really passed. Like, you know, you can just, in fact, you don't even have to talk. You can just sit down and like just feel that each other's energy, and that's enough, because you know that you're friends for life. I think that's the kind of relationship that I value the most, you know.
It's not on shaky ground. Yeah. So like, even when we sat down before we hit record, like, Sean was like, oh, I have not seen you in so long. And in my mind, it really was not very long ago. But then he was like, oh, wait, no, the last time at your house, there was a Christmas tree. And I was like, oh yeah, that means December. I'm really appreciative of the people in my life that I feel secure with, in the sense where I can don't see you for years and I just know we're good. Mm. Like, I don't need to see Sean every day, and I know we'll be good, because I know what his heart is and what he's about, that I don't need to have him here all the time to know that he's great. And I'll root for you, always root for you, you know. That deepens with the real close friends that I have in my life as well. It's reached that point where that chosen family term is starting to really become real for us, you know, where it's like, you know, if we were to even reference sort of you wanting to have kids, right? I don't know if I'm going to be a dad, and I'm actually okay with not being a dad. Mm. Like, I'm very close with my friends now, to a point where it's like, we talk about like, hey, we're going to grow old together. Mm. You know, I'm going to see you when we're like 50, and we're going to keep going, right? And we're going to like remember like how we were when we were like teenagers, and like having like movie nights and stuff. Mm. So I'm really cherishing that chosen family aspect of it. To the person listening to this right now, on the MRT, on the bus, or on your
the toilet. Oh, sometimes they listen when they're pooping.
Like, is that the feedback you've
got? Yes.
The optimal time for the SG
that
voice.
That is, you know, that it's high praise for the fact that they want us to be sharing in that intimate moment with them. But anyway,
we are the SG Boys.
Bloop. Flashback.
So the person listening right now going, is Sean single?
Ooh, is he available?
Could he be the one I've been looking for? What would you say to that person?
I'm single, but I think I'm still working on myself to be ready to date again. Because I always see myself projecting my expectations, or like project my fantasies on this person. And when I kind of like observe myself, and then it makes me realize that I am trying to find someone to complete me, which makes me realize that maybe it's not the best time.
Right. I remember though, you had this list on social media of like your wish list, like qualities that...
Oh, I remember that.
Of your ideal guy. Do you want to manifest it? Like, now that you're on the SG Boys.
Oh, I thought that was wild.
But,
I did.
Yeah, but that was an IG story that vanished in 24 hours. But how about we manifest it? You want to immortalize it on this podcast? Like, put out your wish list?
Should I look?
Do you want to? Because out there is someone else who's looking for a partner, and it might be you.
Yeah,
Sean,
and he's very specific.
And also lists, because let's talk about Sean being a Virgo. This is very Virgo behavior. He came out, before coming on the podcast today, he had this all these talking points about what he wanted to cover.
Yeah.
Usually, Josh and I will do that. Best guest ever. Because
he did his homework. He's probably going to edit this episode, actually.
He's going to do the social media for us. Like, let's read out.
It's actually really long. I'm surprised it was so long.
Okay. So, Sean, Plant Bro, describe your ideal significant other.
He is passionate, driven, funny, but dry humor, comfortable with being either dominant or submissive at different parts of the relationship.
Like, specifically in bed, is it? Or like just in life? Like,
in life.
Okay, like, even like ordering food.
In life.
Okay.
Okay. So once in a while, he like for you to take the lead, decide where to eat,
take the wheel. Yeah.
Creative or stylish. I think I would prefer someone that's more extroverted than me.
So just kind of like bring that out of you a bit more.
Poised, charismatic, but also doesn't take themselves too seriously and comfortable being stupid for a good laugh. Has a hobby and is obsessed. I think it's so attractive when someone is obsessed about something. Like, I don't know, like insects. Or like, you know, just like
that's
anything.
The first thing you thought of. Yeah. Insects. Yeah, someone who's obsessed with insects. Yes. Yeah.
I like, do know someone.
I know so many fun facts about insects. Yeah. It's just like, wow. How
I,
do you...
I know an insect expert. You want me to intro? Ken. Yeah.
Passion, obsession over one thing. I find that very attractive.
Yeah.
I forgot what number.
Like otaku level, right?
Must right. Be a bit nerdy. I was just going to say like, oh, I love One Piece. Yeah. Or I love this thing. Yes. Right.
Quick thinking, resourceful, and handy. So the kind of person that you want to be around when there's a zombie apocalypse.
Or someone who just changed the light bulb.
Yes.
Right. Right.
Respects his parents and has a good relationship with siblings. I think that's very important.
Very important.
Has a sense of self-awareness and some level of emotional intelligence. Understands the need for alone time. Enjoys washing dishes because I hate washing dishes.
Super important.
Loves coffee. I do not understand people who don't drink coffee.
Samjo just joked.
And then the last one is good teeth and oral hygiene.
Also very important.
Also important. Basically, Sean just described himself, except for the extrovert part. But he just described himself.
Yeah, exactly.
So if those, if you're listening and those are also the qualities that you're looking for in a guy, hit up Plum Bro. He is at Plum Bro
underscore.
Because he's a millennial.
Yeah.
It's a very millennial thing to have underscore in your handle yet. But he's empowering girls and queers. He's a designer. He is a lecturer. And you can find him at seanso.com or plantbro_certified blue tick.
Yeah.
I think my dad was driving us back. And then my mom, just out of the blue, was like, have you went on any dates? No. Oh, you know, I have a friend of mine. He has a son. And I think his son is like you. Then I'm like, you want me to text her? And then maybe, you know.
Not gay arranged marriage.
And then I said, can I at least get a picture or like, you know, like tell me what he's like?
Yeah. No pic, no chat.
And then...
I'm sorry, but we like, come on. Looks are, you know, the first round of
not
interviews.
Even an expiring pic.
Yeah.
Share album.
Yeah.
Okay. And then she found a picture and then she told me a little bit about him. He always fights with his mom or whatever like that. And I was like, I don't think he's the one for me, mom. And then immediately she snapped. She was like, you know, you're so high standards. You're going to be alone. You need to like lower your standards. At least give people a chance. And then I just sat there quiet. I was like, mom, but I don't want to lower my standards. And she's like, okay, lo, then you're single, lo.
Wow.
But I feel like there's some truth in that.
Yes.
I think like, I understand where she's coming from. I mean, we always say, don't lower your standards. What she really meant was more about give people a chance or like give yourself a chance.
That's it.
Because I acknowledge that I, even though I'm very social, I'm very friendly, I am also very guarded. I keep a lot of myself behind thick walls.
Mm.
And I think she was trying to like talk to me about that and trying to like open up a little bit.
So your mom actually reminds me of me, right? Because I have some of my good girlfriends who are on the prowl for, you know, straight guys. And I always tell them, it's not about lowering your standards, but like, you know, because sometimes we help them swipe Tinder or whatever.
Right.
And then I would swipe right for them and they'll be like, oh no, why? And I'm like, you know, he looks good. He's like, yeah, but it's too short or like too this. They will always pick. And I think it's human nature. We find one thing that, that we don't like and therefore, you know, core of the mom
that
cannot.
Is so true.
Or, oh, too short. Or, ooh, works in the bank. Like, you know. Yeah,
we judge them.
Yeah, we judge them. And thing is that by that same token, people also judge us. And how would we feel if it's just because of that one thing? Like, you know, I don't like video DJs or I don't like plants or whatever, you know. Sure. I don't like blue hair.
Yeah.
Then, well, fuck us. Like, you know, I mean, quite the opposite. Like, don't fuck us. But you know what I mean? I think it's you are losing. Why don't give people a chance? That's what I mean. It's like you never know. Like sometimes a lot of first impressions don't count. I think about some of the closest people I have in my life. I never thought I would be close friends with them. Mm. But like looking back, I'm glad we gave each other a chance. Yeah. Like we learn to embrace each other's flaws, because like Lord knows none of us are perfect.
But it's easy to judge people when it's online, when it's on apps and stuff like that, right? Because I feel like if it's in real life, or I think the perfect scenario for me is that we start as friends and then something else, like, oh wow, we actually like each other, let's give each other a shot, like that would be the perfect case scenario, because then the judgment is not really there. You kind of like already know each other. It's easy to judge when it's like a profile. It's just a picture and like some horrible bio or emojis or flags.
Yeah. Because you put yourself in that position, it's like you're HR and someone's applying for a job and you're looking at a resume. Everything is there. There are very few surprises left.
Yes.
So when you finally meet them, if you ever get to that point, it's like, you already know everything. I think social media ruins that journey of like discovery, discovering each other.
I think it's also different when you meet someone through a dating app and then you meet them for the first time. It's like an interview vibe. And I really don't like that, because it's like, tell me about this. Where it feels really like orchestrated. I don't really like that.
Yeah.
I think with your list, the things that matters the most to you will shift also over time.
Yes.
I think from your mom's perspective, hey, this is someone that I know, this is their kid, there's still a sense of like guardianship there. Like I can protect you because I know these people. I can bring you all two together. I don't want you to be alone. And as a parent, they would feel like, okay, I feel like I can trust this union or unit if it were to happen, compared to some random person out there that I have no idea, the stranger. You know, so I think from their perspective, it's like, hey, give it a shot. At least we can kind of like be there to say like everything's okay.
So my mom will come on my first date with me, basically. She'll sit right beside us.
We are Asian after all.
I've been on a semi, like a date. Well, I guess it was someone I met on the apps.
Your mom arranged it?
No. But the first date was, he invited me over to his place and he cooked, but his mom was also there.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was like, it was just a lot. But I mean, it was very sweet, because like one thing I love about him, he's still a friend, by the way, I'm not going to name him though. He's very close with his mom and he really respects his mom. You can tell he really took care of his mom, like, you know, and it's just that it wasn't what I was expecting.
Yeah.
We're already at a place, like, sure, let's get on, right? But I'm glad, like, you know, we took it slow and instead of dipping it low.
I have a story for that. There was one time my mom asked me to cook dinner for her friends, and all her Thai Thai friends came, and then I cooked them a meal, and then I really connected with one of her friends. She was telling me about how she's wanting to redecorate her place, because I was sharing them with a designer, but I have an interest in interior design and styling. I love furniture. I freaking love talking about furniture. Anyway, showing her Pinterest images, she's like, oh my god, like, are you free? Like, can we go shopping together? So I went out with her. I spent a day with my mom's friend, and I brought her to different furniture shops. And then she was like, oh, you know, I want you to meet my daughter. And I was like, oh, okay. Then she's like, let's go for drinks. And so it was me, my mom, her, and her daughter at a bar, like about 2 weeks after that. And when I sat down in front of her daughter, and then she looked at me, and then she said, by the way, I know you're plump, bro. And I was like, oh. Then I was like, so do you know what your mom intended this to be? She's like, yeah, I have a feeling. Then I said, it's okay, we can be sisters. And then after that, we become really good friends.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
I love that.
But now her mom knows. And I was just at a wedding yesterday, and the mom was there, and she was like, Sean, what type of guys do you like? Let me help you. And she was like helping me look for eligible bachelors. It was very cute.
I mean, if we were to reflect on the plant bro journey, it seems like you, I mean, not to reference my radio show so explicitly, but you're on your way. You've been on your way.
What show is this?
When the season comes, plant season. When the season comes where you're supposed to meet this person and romance is in the air and all that, then it will happen. I have no doubt. It seems like everything has kind of like led from one thing to another. You're very much like on your own journey right now. And yeah, we wish you the best. And I have no doubts that like when you return to this podcast, maybe like a year from now, you would have like a whole lot more stories to share and experiences as well. Yeah.
By the way, before you go, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners want to know also, why Plant Bro? Because I think you told me before, but I got to admit, I forgot.
Okay, so when I first moved back to Singapore, I had this anxiety and I didn't want to own anything because I always had the feeling that I was going to leave Singapore. And during that time, also, when I moved back, I was feeling very lonely and very low. And remember, I was really close to my dad. So my dad, I didn't have friends then. So I always hung out with my dad, like almost every day. And we will always go to plant shops together because I love looking at plants. And then my dad said, why don't you buy a plant? And I was like, I don't want to buy anything. I don't want to own anything because I might leave. And then my father was like, it's okay. Just buy a plant. And then if you leave, then you just give it to me. And I was like, no, it's okay. I don't want to. Then he's like, whenever you're sad or lonely, just buy a plant. Come, I'll buy you your first plant. And so every time we went out, whenever I felt low, I would buy a plant. And very soon after, my whole studio apartment was filled with plants. So when I wanted a TikTok or social media handle, I looked around my room. So it's plant. And I'm the eldest brother of four. So bro, a lot of people have told me that I give big brother energy. So plant bro.
I'm Joshua Simon.
I'm Sam Joe.
And we are
the SG Boys,
that little gay podcast from Singapore.
Subscribe and find us on Instagram at the SG Boys.
The beliefs, views, and opinions expressed on this podcast are attributable to its hosts only and are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, organization, company, or individual.